between 1:30 and 3:30, we were a meeting of the Portland Design Commission. Now, from 3:30 until the end of our agenda, we are a meeting of the Portland Design Commission and also the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission. So we are going to have a briefing on vertical infrastructure in the right-of-way, and then we will have a Type 3 land use review on 1 Pacific Square, renovations to the ground floor and plazas. So let's begin with introductions of the commissioners who are now here. Sam Leistart.
Sam Rodriguez.
Maya Fodi.
Don Vallister.
Annie Mahoney.
Andrew Smith.
Matthew Roman.
Ernestina Fuenmayor.
Zeri Satner.
And I'm Julie Livingston. This is just a briefing, so there is no potential for conflict, bias, or ex parte contact. The planner assigned to this case is Tim Herron.
That's me, yes.
We will turn it over to Tim unless sure. I'm missing something on the agenda. I don't think that we need to go through items of interest or any other thing before this off.
I'm just having a kind of a starstruck moment right now.
Of course you are. He's so sweet.
I'm going to take a moment, and I'm going to say this is really a pleasure to see both commissions sitting at the dais.
You don't do this too often.
You don't do it too often, so I think it deserves a moment. And that moment is just to kind of acknowledge your volunteer effort and coordination. I'm particularly aware of that because with Laura's help and others, trying to coordinate you all to show up on a Thursday at 3 and change, and you are all here, I mean, it's epic. I want to just take a moment. I'm thrilled.
And on Pi Day, no less. Did you bring pie for us?
No.
No doubt about it.
We'll all go right. Home then.
So without further ado, and your volunteer time, you all received from me a typical looking kind of memo dated March 7th. What's not so typical about it is pretty much everything we're going to talk about here forward. Some of you are familiar with vertical infrastructure and right away. You may have been here last March or April. And I guess Ann Hill to my left with PBOT just asked me a question. I thought it'd be probably a good idea just to help orient. Some of you are entrenched and know exactly what we've been talking about, and some of you may be very new. So I guess I'd like to hear from commissioners that are familiar with this topic, which is to say you were here last March or April. Could you just kind of sound off for the benefit of PBOT in the room?
Okay. I was here.
For the most part. And then, Annie, you were involved in interim meetings, and we know that. Okay.
And former Commissioner Tad Savinar was as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So as a little bit of a spoiler alert, before we get into the details, I do want to kind of highlight a couple things that we do want to come out of this as we get into it. And one is going to be looking for some commissioner volunteers to participate in a future stakeholder advisory committee on what will be kind of an interesting design project, and we'll talk about that. And then ultimately, again, with the same synergy and opportunity we had to have both commissioners in the room at the same time, I think it'd be really good for both commissions to write a joint letter, kind of articulating what you heard, what you support, because as we move forward with this project, that kind of, not just documentation, but acknowledgement by this volunteer body, since we all play a different role advising what happens in the right-of-way, would really be important at this point. And so I think some of that will make a lot more sense once we get through the presentation. So without further ado, and if there's no questions, I'm just gonna run through the memo really quick to set the stage for Ann. Is that great? So this is our second briefing on the matter, but some of you, and Commissioner Mahoney particularly, and Commissioner Savinar, before he left us, met several times with PBOT, and that is to say with Ann Hill and several people on our team, talking about what you're going to hear a little bit more detail about today, which is the future co-location of small cell wireless, why these things work so well in downtown Portland, and how we're going to integrate them as seamlessly as possible into our rights of way. And so part of the effort in meeting over the last year, we had several sessions, was trying to follow up on the briefings that we had back in March and April with you all, with some essentially some initial concern about altering the twin ornamentals as a vertical infrastructure and the right-of-way element, and trying to come up with other options. Where, you know, if we need to incorporate this, and we're going to hear more specifically why we legally need to find a way, is where is the best place they can be? Where are they most efficient? How do we balance technology, compatibility, and so on and so forth, and changing urban landscape, which I think we'll all acknowledge is changing quickly, especially as Portland grows, especially as we just heard BPS talk about some of the design review overlays expansion and so on and so forth. So I say that, but I really want to acknowledge a lot of meetings that Commissioner Mahoney attended, as well as Commissioner Savinar, to help move this forward. I think that bore a lot of fruit. It was very helpful. It took a lot of time. I think we met 6 to 8 times in about 90-minute sessions. It's probably about right. And some communication and review of materials beforehand. So thank you very much. And as I mentioned, and as I started with, we're going to be looking for a volunteer from each commission to move forward on the next stage of this process, which is reviewing a design project, and then otherwise, ultimately, a kind of a joint letter that would acknowledge kind of what we heard today and steps moving forward. That's all I have.
There you go. Is it on now? My name's Ann Hill. I work at the Bureau of Transportation, and I don't know if the best way, if people have questions during it, if it's better for you to raise your, like, to ask, because...
With this many people participating in the discussion, is it okay if we save them till the end?
It's totally up to you.
I don't want to derail whatever process works best for you, but that allows us to be more efficient.
Sure.
And we are time sensitive.
Yes, absolutely. And please, Tim, like, throw oranges at me if I need to move faster. Okay. So thank you very much for allowing this briefing to happen today. I know that you are all meeting over another topic. So just to jump right in, you do have in front of you the materials. We're going to be covering, this is what we're going to be, it's not changing up. Hold on. Is it changing in front of you? It's not. What am I doing wrong? Am I doing so? I'm sorry. It's changing it here, but not there. So I do it with...
Yeah, see if...
Okay, there we go. Sorry. So I'll start with this. A quick background. Recap again what a wireless small cell is. Talk about some FCC developments that have happened since we met with you in the spring. And then move into the standards that we've been working on, the inventory, which was important to this group, the update that will happen around the underground wiring district, and then the RFI process. And we will follow up with next steps and questions. So the background, in the spring of 2018, we did brief both commissions on the potential impacts that vertical infrastructure deployments could have on Portland. So small cell attachments are coming to cities across the country. This is to fill in for density between the macro cell sites. So if we think about it as a spider web, each of those carriers have different networks, and they need to be able to ping signals from one to another as we walk down the street with our phones and other devices. The more that we are streaming everything from architectural plans to parking, using our phones to streaming movies, the more we need that data and the ability to connect to the network. And so between 30 and 40 feet is where they need to be. And that is ideally, I mean, the perfect place, of course, then is on poles in the right of way, because that's where people are moving. This is going to be also important for what's coming next to sort of all cities, which are looking at things like autonomous vehicles, connected vehicles, anything that's connected real-time transit needs that network connectivity that is right there on the street level. So when we staff heard that this was coming and started thinking about if you're trying to think about how many we would be coming, how many of these sites would there be across the city, The number 2 years ago or 18 months was for every 1,000 people, there will be one site, one pole, and then there's at least 4 carriers. So there's 600,000 people in Portland. So you're looking at 2,400 poles are going to have things hung off them. So that was a big number. And knowing that everyone wants to be downtown because that's where we're the most dense with pedestrians. And then realizing that we have an underground wiring district where the only poles that are downtown are our poles, our city poles, mostly ornamental poles, except for TriMet's catenary poles. Other than that, all the poles downtown are ours. And so I met with Tim and said, I think we need to come start talking to the commissions because we're going to be told we have to replace. We're going to have to do something, and we should start the conversation on the front end. So that's when we began talking to you. We did write a framework that is in your document, in your packet here, which was sort of a way to just sort of draw a circle as staff around what the implications of this were and who we needed to talk to in terms of where policies had been developed over time. So that was sort of a place that we started. When we started negotiations this fall with the carriers, Mayor Wheeler and Transportation Commissioner Udaly did direct staff at Transportation and at the Office of Community Technology to sort of adhere or use 5 principles, which are here. There's 5 of them. So we want to ensure that digital inclusion occurs across communities. We want to manage the public right-of-way to support the well-being of all residents. We want to secure fair and reasonable compensation for the use of that right-of-way. We want to make sure that these deployments support the Digital Equity Action Plan that's been adopted by Council and ensure that the city protects the public health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. So that's been at the forefront of all of this work. So what's a small cell? What you see is, I think, on one side here is the 80-foot tower. They can range up to 250 feet. These have been around for a while. They're macro cell towers. What you see, to my right, is the small cell on a street light. That's on the top there is what they call a cantenna. That is it's a tube that has inside of it antennas, and that's for 4G. So when our phones all say 4G, that's the 4G antenna. What's missing from that drawing is there is a radio, so there's a cabinet. That is also a piece of the quote installation, as well as 5G antennas are what they call pizza boxes. They're actually bigger than a pizza box. They're probably this big. They are not flush mounted. So there will be 2 to 3 of those that will come off of the pole. And those are directional. Those aren't to market yet, the 5G, which is why we don't have many designs for them. So that's just a space, and you can see in that one just how they work. I wanted to just cover this quickly because this has a lot to do with the constraints we as a city have. The Federal Communications Commission adopted 2 administrative acts around wireless deployment that affect the city of Portland. The first one was a moratoria, which basically says that cities cannot stop and say we want to take a year or we want to take 6 months to develop a process to include the processing and permitting of wireless attachments. We have challenged that ruling in the Ninth Circuit on October 2nd, 2018. The second order, which was issued on September 26, 2018, and it became effective at the beginning of this year, significantly limits the local authority to manage wireless infrastructure deployments in the public right-of-way, specifically around what we should be able to charge and how we can actually limit or regulate the aesthetics around this equipment. The city, as part of a national coalition, has challenged that order in the Ninth Circuit on October 25th, 2018. And City Attorney Maya Haim is here if there are any questions. Because that we are in litigation, she'll be happy to answer any of those questions if they come up. So this has made it more difficult for us to be able to just say no. No, you can't be in the underground wiring district. No, you can't be in the right-of-way. No, you can't be on a pole. So when we started last year, one of the things that I think Commissioner Savinar and Commissioner Mahoney, along with all of you, really helped us with is when we started looking specifically at the underground wiring district and downtown, and the notion of where we predominantly have poles, ornamental poles, was to figure out how we were gonna sort of prioritize where these poles would go. And you all helped come up with a suggested hierarchy, which was to begin first with signal lights downtown, then move to catenary poles or the streetcar poles. After that, move to whatever existing Cobra Head or Davit poles were downtown that had not been replaced by an ornamental. And then if we were going to get to mid-block ornamental replacement, to have an RFI process to actually come up with a new standard, because it was not desirable to have a faux ornamental. That was not something that you wanted to see. So we took that and our results from that. Actually, this map here was a map that Tad put together. I think, I'm not sure who else helped with this from the commission. Sure, but what that map shows, and you can all come up and look at it, is sort of the areas ideally where you would not want any deployment. So the yellow areas are the historic and design districts. There was a blue, there was some around the park blocks, some of the federal or city hall. So there were some sort of iconic areas in the city. So we looked at that as a place to start. As we started digging in, we found that we started with signal poles. Signal poles are very expensive to replace because you have to replace both poles in an intersection. So you can't just replace one, and it can trigger ADA requirements. So you're looking at a huge public works process for an entire intersection. And while the carriers will be replacing the poles, the infrastructure, we have shot clocks. There's timelines based on that FCC order that we are obligated to follow. And we as staff could not figure out how you fit a public works process that starts at 10% when you submit for permit. And you sort of moved 100% through 4 to 6 months, how you get that to a 60-day, like submit your permit, you have 60 days, or they can build. Like we haven't had the brain power to figure out how to actually do that. So we said, okay, if a carrier does want to come in and really wants to use a pole, we will do that, but that's not gonna be the process we set up. We just can't right now figure out how to sort of make that pencil out with the restrictions we have. So it's absolutely something that they can do, and we are getting designs for signal poles, but that's not where we were gonna start just because of the cost. So the second one was catenary poles. And what we learned about catenary poles or streetcar poles is they don't have any electricity in them, and they're tension poles. So unlike San Francisco and other areas where I researched, because we don't have a bus line, if you were to replace catenary pole, you have to dig the foundation out. It takes 4 days to cure. They're gonna have to run, like the streetcar line would be down for a week. And we don't have buses. We, PBOT, don't like to reroute people. So that seemed to be not a great option, and it's quite limited in terms of where they are in the city. But we have put in place notes to say that if we were to extend the streetcar lines anywhere, we absolutely should build this specification into those poles moving forward. So the third one was to look at Cobra Heads or Davit poles in the underground wiring district. And again, there was I looked and Tim looked and planning looked, there has been a rule, well, a practice, because we can't find a rule, a practice that if you, any pole downtown that is replaced gets replaced with an ornamental. But that is not in code, that is not in rule, there is nothing but a map. So it has been done, which has been fabulous, but there's no rule or code to follow. So we said, what if we did not replace those Cobra Heads downtown, because we need to give them somewhere to go? What if we just allowed them to replace those with Cobra Heads or Davits? So we're not replacing, I remember, not removing an ornamental. So we found 1,130 Cobra Head / Davit poles sort of between 405 to Lloyd Center, that whole area, which we have on this map, the second map here. And out of that, 910 of those were not on federal property. They weren't within a historic district. They weren't adjacent to a bridge. So we have a 910 that we would be, we're proposing, we will be releasing in sort of the first inventory, the wave of inventory. We're a little bit nervous because you can look later and see where the green dots are on this map. They are by no means, if someone's doing that, building a network across the city, they are by no means enough in terms of being sort of spread out. But what we do know is to replace a pole is a public works project. And even if all four were ready, carriers were ready to go tomorrow, they're legitimately not, 910 is a good number to start with. They're not going to be able to do, like, get more than maybe 5 or 6 ready sort of every few months, we think, just because of the magnitude of does it have a basement? Is the foundation in someone's basement? I mean, there's all this work they're going to have to do to design the standard. So that's where we're starting. So based on the findings, the first phase of city-owned poles to be released for attachments in the central city will be those 900 Cobra Head or Davitt streetlights, which you can see up here. I will say that we did make one accommodation. Well, so let me just step back. The beautiful thing is if it's federal property, it's not our right-of-way, so we can't release the poles. We can't release the poles, like, for example, at Pioneer Square, because that's also not our right. It's a sort of a complex agreement. We're not, I'm looking at former district director of parks. We're not releasing poles on any parks property, right? So on the waterfront side of NATO, right? Because as a first phase, it's just a little too complicated to figure that whole piece out. So that's not for phase one or in any of the park blocks. I mean, it's technically our right of way, but it's too much, so we're not going to release them. So, and then on Broadway, which I know there was some desire to keep them off of Broadway, there were only like 2 Cobra Heads on Broadway. So we said, fine, no to those 2. But there are a few that are off on the side right off of Broadway, so they could release on those. So we, for the most part, I think most of what you had recommended, we are adhering to. The one area would be where those historic districts are on major corridors like Burnside. We are allowing those Cobra Heads on Burnside, even if they butt up against a historic or design. And we are also allowing Cobra Heads on NATO Parkway in that spot on NATO where we did not put a pole, right? So there are spots on NATO Parkway across from Waterfront Park where we did not put the 4th ornamental or the 3rd ornamental, and we are allowing that. That's almost a way to like not to sort of hopefully satiate their need without having to get right into the issue of the ornamentals. And again, we don't know where they're going to go until they come and sort of begin to share their plans. So you can come and look at those. I think that was a big part of what we talked about in our last meetings. The next thing I wanted to show is these are actually, so if we go to Cobra Heads, we need to come up with designs. The city does. Currently our Cobra Head poles, they're in foundations that are not adequate to hold the equipment nor the weight of the equipment. And we want to have these poles have raceways within them that can have conduit both for our needs and for the needs of a carrier while maintaining, and Josh Crane is here from the Bureau of Transportation, who's an engineer who's managing the contract with HDR to make sure that all I've heard is we don't want poles to get to be 6 bolts. We want them to stay 4 bolts. So we're working to keep things small in terms of how big the actual diameter of the pole gets. So what we used here is that on the one side, of course, is the ornamental for scale. So if you are thinking about, let's say there's a Cobra Head on a street in the central city, what we've said was that the pole that you would most likely see is that 25-foot Cobra Head. And what we've said is that the carriers would have to install their equipment higher than 22 feet. The idea being that 22 feet is the top of the ornamental, so that your sight line, at least looking down the street, would not be distracted by equipment. The equipment we're talking about, there's three pieces. So the cantenna is about 6 feet tall. That's what's coming off the top, up to 6 feet. You can see the in there, there's the specifications. And then there's the shroud. So the shroud is where all those cables that come out, they would have to be protected. There's a picture on subsequent page we can look at. Then there's a radio cabinet. The radio cabinet is about 5 feet, 7.5 cubic feet. AT&T wants 10 cubic feet. We're pushing for 7.5 cubic feet. What's really hard with this, it's them saying our equipment doesn't fit and us saying to them, we don't know if we believe you. So it's sort of a hard place to get into because it's like prove it or don't prove it. So they agreed to 7.5 cubic feet when they thought that they might have to fit on an ornamental. So we're trying to keep them at the 7.5. And then on top of that, there are these panel antennas, the 5G, that will radiate out from there. So it'll be 2 to 3 of those. The other three options are... my understanding is downtown it'll be 25 feet or 30 feet. Those other two are for streets that are larger, right? So the idea being that it's the same, they get the same space and it's gonna be the same standard. This, what you see below, we're calling that sort of city space. So it could be for a banner, it could be for street signs, it could be for a basket, right? So we're saying you can't be below a certain level. That's that line across the top of the ornamental. And the things behind below there are things we would want, we the city would want. So that's how we've sort of tried to, not sort of, that is how we are managing the aesthetics and the design of the pole. So this is the first this will be the first design standard. And again, the standard is for the pole, not for their equipment. So we have dimension requirements for their equipment. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about pink to match and what you can't and what you can?
Yes. So we have said, and again, we can get more what our current rules, and I'm going to work with Tim to make sure you see our rules. So the rules will go out, which is the process for submittal, but it also will have the standards in writing, that I'm basically talking about here, so feel free to comment. We have said that the pole has to be painted the color of the poles on that street. So if you're on a downtown street and all the poles happen to be army green, then you need to paint the pole that same color so that, again, it's not distracting. Again, if you all say, no, keep it silver, we can do that, but we've said you have to match the color of the poles on the street, and you have to, the cabinets have to be the color, right? So that they have to match. Our understanding is the antenna, not the cantenna on the top, but the antennas that are hanging off the side, which is that little Star Wars looking ship thing up in the corner, the triangle shape, the circle, that's what the cantennas, the 5G antennas, they tell us those cannot be painted and you can't shroud them because the frequency, it affects the frequency, the radio frequency. So again, until we see specifications, it's hard for us to say, no, you're wrong. So those will not be painted. So this is what we're looking at. On the not the wood pole, that's a utility pole, but on the other side, you see the cantenna at the top. You see the panel antennas, and then you see the cabinets. So that is what the equipment is. Some cities have chosen to try to get everything inside a pole, but then you're looking at, a totem pole. You're looking at a big pole to fit this stuff. So there's no ideal solution currently. Most of the poles on the east side of the city and even throughout other parts of the west side are the utility poles. And this is what they're doing in Eugene. So you can see the transformer. The cantenna, again, is off the top. Now, we talked to PGE. PGE is not going to allow them to attach to the top because they are going to be attaching their own antennas off the top soon for their smart grid. So they're going to need that space. So those antennas are going to be lower. So again, but they're going to have equipment. So that equipment box, that's about 10 feet. That's about 10 cubic feet there, that cabinet. So we've talked to the pole owners. And the pole owners, I think at this point, while we can't tell them where they can locate the equipment because it's very complicated with the electrical wires and the other folks that they have on their wires, I think they are in agreement. We're going to wait to see what their rules are, but they are entertaining just what our standard is for those sizes will be what theirs is, which makes it easier for them because they can just say, it's the city, go back to the city. And then they don't need to fight over it. But they will be the predominant, like most neighborhoods will see small cells being installed on utility poles. So it's going to be everywhere. And we are looking at asking, you know, can you paint the boxes? And we're also really looking at conduit, like the, you know, you see the poles right now with the conduit strapped up the side of the poles. We're hoping to get that covered too. The Vertical Infrastructure Program, the VI program, is what we're calling the permitting and processing of these applications. That's going to be done at PBOT. Alex Bejarano is here as well. He will be managing that team at a PBOT, and that team will be responsible for the leasing of city poles, the permitting, the inspecting of the installation, and the enforcement of that throughout the city. And this is, of course, we just want to say that there is no way we wouldn't have been able to do this without the partnership of the staff at BPS, BDS, the Office of Community Technology, and the City Attorney's Office. We've all worked together on this. The final piece of this puzzle is, you know, our underground wiring district, we're going to have to do a code update because we're going to have to change the code to say that you can allow attachments to poles in the right-of-way. We have written this in a way and have reviewed it with the city attorney's office to make it very narrow because we don't want to open the door to then everybody thinking they can attach whatever they want downtown, including TriMet's catenary poles. So that's why it says here that TriMet has allowed to attach things for transit supporting infrastructure, but not sort of anything that they would want to attach as well without reviewing with us. This is going to have to go to council. We will go through a review process, of course, in the downtown. So this is another area where we would be looking to your support or acknowledgement that we came here to speak to you. And if any of you have any recommendations of those groups or organizations where we should do outreach, because this is the downtown, or the underground wiring district, we would welcome those recommendations as well. So this will be coming, we're getting it ready right now, the ordinance, but we'll have to do the outreach first and the public notification for a month before we go to council. So, and then the final piece, of course, is to replace the mid-block ornamentals or even to entertain the thought of a new design or a new replacement for Cobra Heads going forward. We are going to be leading, which was a suggestion, I think, of Commissioner Savinar. We are going to be leading an RFI/RFP multi-step process to get a new design. It won't just be for mid-block ornamentals. Ideally, we would have then something that we could use throughout the city. We're going to begin in April next month to kick this off. So we have most of the RFI written with the help of Commissioner Mahoney, I know, reviewed it. Commissioner Savinar wrote a hunk of it. So we'd love you to review it and then to really participate in that process when we get the requests in and the proposals and some of the debates. So we'd love to have a member of each. We've also invited Tim to be part of that as well. So these are the three requests that we're asking. Again, we say support. I understand some of this is not ideal, so support can be interpreted by the commission, but an acknowledgement that we've been here and included you in the process would be, I think, the commission, the council would like to hear that. And any questions?
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Anne. We have just under 15 minutes left, so we will be direct in our comments, and we will give you a response to participation and letters of support. Very clear. It's come a long way since you were last in the room. Thank you very much for the hard work. Annie, I'm wondering if you might offer your thoughts, if you have any, since you are the person who has been most engaged in this over the course of the last year.
Engaged is a strong word, but I've shown up to the meetings. I think primarily for the Landmarks Commission's concerns had to do with protecting historic ornamentals. I know that there are newer ornamentals out there, so that was where that comment came from about faux historic. And I think a big thing I was pushing for was an inventory of that, of those historic ornamentals. I think one thing that, this is sort of a sidebar, but one thing that came to light through the conversation was the maintenance of those historic poles. I think there's been a lot of destruction and sort of poles that have fallen apart, you know, self-destructed. So I think we're, you know, sidebar, trying to push for the city to maintain those as best they can. That's not PBOT's concern in this project necessarily, but Tad and I directed, you know, areas of the city beyond historic districts, Halperin Sequence, anywhere there was sort of a specialty already, you know, light pole that was installed, and trying to preserve those areas. Mm-hmm. So we're happy that there's been this priority placed on non-ornamentals. I'm very interested to see how that process goes for the RFP for the new ornamentals. Another thing I think we talked about, but I don't know if you mentioned, Anne, was looking at new designs that might, that are not ornamentals, for things like the Green Loop and newer projects that are coming up, to kind of standardize a more modern or contemporary looking. But I don't know if that's down the road or part of the another RFP.
It would be, our idea is it would be one RFP, and that we would get designs in that could be either used sort of across the city. So it could be used when you replace a mid-block ornamental, or for a new green loop, or for, it could be that way, right? We just, this is the new standard, this is what we're using. Or it might be as we get those back that there's feedback that comes that we have more than one option, right? I think it depends what we get. But we've currently worked to budget for one. We're going to need to get like three design, pay people to do like three designs, and then pay to get one engineer at least for the get-go. So it might be that it turns into something more. Yeah, absolutely. Because we're kind of, we all don't know where it's going. I mean, in terms of what we'll get in and what the committee will want to see. So yes.
Did the inventory distinguish between historic and non-historic decorative?
I can't remember. Yeah. Honestly, it's been a
while.
Did
it address conditions too?
Some of, you know, we do have, and Tim, it's all in our GIS, so it's all layers. So we have layers. We have looked at, we have most of the ornamental poles. We have the ornamental poles, and they have all the numbers on them. Right, one of the poles fell over when someone put a ladder up to install a banner. Like, it literally fell over. So there are issues with the ornamentals. And we did do more work to make sure that it, like, currently it would say there would be a pink dot, which is an ornamental, and a green dot would be a non-ornamental, but we further went to say which green dots were like the Halperin lights. I don't know to what extent that we did sort of further analysis on those, because we had a big task, but we are continuing to work forward. And in the east side, we would say that currently we're not going to release any of our poles in like Irvington or in Ladd's Addition, or, you know, those other areas that are hysteric, or the scenic, there's two scenic byways, right? Terwilliger and Rocky Beach. Anyway, so we've made sure that we kept those out too. So.
Other thoughts?
I just had a
Dawn?
Couple of questions.
Sure.
Any chance that the various telecom companies can share a pole instead of, no, they want their own poles, huh?
I think, yeah, and if you look at that equipment, I'm not quite sure, because it'd be two equipment box. I mean, I don't, so currently, no, they don't want to share.
They're not into the shared economy, I guess.
It might be as things, you know, they're getting smaller and smaller, but currently they don't want to share. And then just thinking of what sharing would mean, I don't know if it just means more stuff on that pole.
And then the other question I have, we've gone through 2G, 3G, 4G, now 5G. What happens with 6G, 7G? Who cleans all this old stuff up?
Exactly. So we've worked, you know, we've worked to put into the contract to the best that we can. And again, I think the city attorney, Maya Hyam, and others are sort of, you know, thinking that through moving forward. We, for example, are making sure that the poles that we're designing are not going to just, you know, hold this, but will be versatile moving forward. So I think the general, we've always just sort of poured foundations that don't really hold much more than the pole. Well, that's not going to be the case anymore. I think the utilities are looking at that too. So there's those kinds of accommodations. But again, you're right. We don't know what's coming. And the FCC's not on our sort of been supportive of accommodating any of our concerns with sort of them having to give us any warning or leeway.
I have a couple of questions. Sure. When new generations come on board or installed, do the older one gets decommissioned?
No. So what you see around town right now, there are these big, ugly, loud generators. I've asked about that. Those are DAS systems. It's like completely different equipment for different use, so those won't come down. Because this hasn't been out long enough, it's hard to know if they are going to take down or if they're going to add to. Mm. We've been trying to ask that, but they don't really have to tell us, but we've been asking.
It's amazing.
I know.
So the areas that are yellow, you said, you know, we're not putting anything there, like in the old town, Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned that they want the frequency of these mm-hmm. are 30 to 40 feet. So what happens in those areas?
Well, we're crossing our fingers right now. I mean, until they kind of come in and tell us where they want to be, it's hard to know. So they're used to being not allowed in certain areas. So they are on rooftops. They are on parking garages. I know that we've been working with BDS because BDS has a permit process for that. They are on water towers, right? So they are on other, so I don't know how they're going to necessarily deal with that. If they absolutely had to be there, we might say you have to be on a signal pole. Like you're going to have to just redo the entire intersection because you can't be on an iconic pole in the historic. But it kind of until they come in and say we absolutely have to be here. Mm-hmm. And we haven't heard that too far. When we told them that we wanted them in vaults underground, they all, like, absolutely not in a way. And then we realized there was no vault space. So it was kind of a non-question.
So they bear the installation costs, regardless
yes.
of what
no.
what that is.
And they're bearing the replacement cost.
Okay. And so does the FCC have the same rules and regulations that they are applying to public right-of-way apply to private properties, for
no.
instance? No,
but
of course not.
Okay. I'm looking at the city attorney because I don't.
The FCC order did make a few of the provisions applicable to the private property as well, and I've been working with BDS and BPS to make sure that we have the appropriate processes in place. And several of the commissioners have said what we've done to the right-of-way, we fully intend to do to private property in the next few years.
Right. So then there would be more choices. So not all the burden would be carried through the right-of-way.
I would not characterize it that way because the utilities want to be in the right-of-way, and they see mm-hmm. that as a government-owned property, which they can get for cheaper rates.
Well, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Just to piggyback on that a little bit, the 30 to 40 feet you're talking about, that's off of above grade. That's
right.
A vertical dimension.
Yes. Right.
Do you have a sense for once their 5G network is sort of fully implemented, what kind of spacing that each of the carriers would have, and then obviously it would be times four?
Have you heard, it keeps sort of changing because I actually think the carriers are learning right now because they don't have it up yet, but
A lot of it's very dependent on the geography, whether the building materials are sufficient for the radio frequencies to go through. So it's very site specific.
Okay.
But I think that we've got very dense downtown areas. It's going to be on almost every pole.
Eventually.
Does that mean four every block?
Yes. Although if T-Mobile and Sprint merge, we're looking at three major carriers, so it will take it from four to three. So yay.
I can only hope. I long for wires. I mean, so. I just want to make a quick comment. If this is going on all across the country, it seems like they could hire an industrial designer with some aesthetic sort of to work on this equipment. Just I you mentioned you're involved with a coalition and you're suing these folks, and the Cantenna itself is sort of sleek. It doesn't look terrible, but the rest of the equipment, like nobody with any aesthetic consideration put any design thought into it, and it wouldn't take that much, and you could roll it out all over the country because everybody would want the beautiful version of it. It looks like it was all designed by an electrical engineer. There's no industrial design or aesthetic consideration to this at all.
This was one of my thoughts as well. We're going to end up with these really gorgeous new light poles through this RFI process, and then they're going to be hung with really awful cell equipment that's just going to kind of destroy their aesthetic.
The strap, you know, connections where they're just literally really strapping the equipment to the poles. And
well, anyway, that's going to be part of the design.
If you guys, through this coalition, could express that, hey, there would be a much more palatable response to this if you guys softened up the aesthetics a little bit. I mean, you can't make it go away, but
so just when we asked for the request for
designers out there,
for
our project, you know.
That's what we envision the RFI being, is not just a poll, is here's the pole and here's all the kit of parts that now have to be on a pole. Design something. That's what we're going to be asking for. Like, you design something that can hide this stuff or whatever. Like, this is all the widgets. So you
The issue really is the widgets.
It's the widgets, right. Right. It's the widgets. It's not the pole. Like, we're not going to ask for just a pole, because we're going to end up in the same place we are now, which is everyone's going to love the pole that then's not going to look like that pole any longer. So,
anyway, I know you can't do anything about that, but I'm sure everyone would agree that it's just they're ugly pieces of equipment that don't have to be so ugly.
So just a few minutes left. Any final comments?
Well, I was just curious. I mean, it sounds like we're in litigation right now where it's not yet clear if we're allowed to even mandate this, correct? Because are we being told that we can't even mandate this level of design requirements?
No, we... we actually yesterday, there's been some news in the paper, AT&T, so we've been in this chicken and the egg, right? Because the FCC said $270 seems to be a fair and reasonable amount to charge, and anything more than that, you cities have to like sort of prove your costs. Well, you don't usually lease based on what your cost recovery is. You lease based on the market rate. So through us staff working on rates and establishing which is higher, we negotiated... we established our franchise rate, our franchise fee for $1,250 per site. And then if you're going to lease our pole, it's going to be $750 per site per year. So it's about a little over $2,000. And AT&T agreed to that. And we have to charge that rate to everyone. So that's seven times what the, you know, FCC sort of suggested rate, reasonable rate was. We are using that same sort of dialogue, working with the carriers to come up with designs that are smaller, more compact. And the FCC defines a small cell as something that's smaller than 28 cubic feet, which is literally the size of what your refrigerator in your house. So the fact that we are down to 7.5 cubic feet for a cabinet, and we're at up to six feet for that. I mean, we're getting smaller. Some cities are just putting in 28 cubic feet, right? So we are gaining. I mean, we are, I think because of our relationship with the carriers, we are able to do some negotiation on that.
Regardless of what the standards are saying.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, they want to get to market, right? They want to get to market. So, they're working with us.
So, Anne, you have asked for some support for your trip to council, and it sounds like a letter from both Design Commission and Historic Landmarks Commission would be desirable. Are there any members of the Historic Landmarks Commission here today that would like to work on the landmarks letter?
I wouldn't be happy to put together a draft.
Excellent. And Design Commission, we only have four design commissioners present today, and I'd like to discuss this with Commissioner McCarter, who is our urban planner, and see if he has an interest in this. And are there any other design commissioners here today that would want to take that on, maybe in conjunction with Commissioner McCarter? So we'll let you know.
Sure.
We'll circle the wagons and Absolutely. Let you know who from Design Commission is going to take lead on that.
Sure.
Do you have a deadline for those letters?
I think I could work with Tim. I mean, this isn't going the code is going to be, you know, we're going to have that up for at least 3 weeks, right? So it's not imminent.
Okay,
I mean,
okay, we've got time. Like,
when's the council hearing?
We don't have one, but it was like a month. I mean, it's like a month.
End of April be
yeah.
fair?
Okay. I think so, yes. I can follow up with you.
Okay. Is there interest in doing a joint letter, or would the commissions like to write their own letters?
I think a joint letter would be...
Seems reasonable.
More powerful going to city council.
I don't know what that letterhead looks like. I mean, is there enough room on the page for words?
Yet another opportunity to be starstruck by what a new letterhead design would look like. I'm sure we could figure something out. I only offered it if it was convenient or makes sense. I think there is obviously something synergistic about a collective response. And I see a lot of nodding heads, and I think the issues are really comparable. I think some of that letter would definitely be congratulatory and appreciative
yep.
of the mm-hmm. efforts and the movement so far, and vis-a-vis the map work and staying outside of certain areas and protecting certain areas. And so I think that in the conversations I've had with Annie and Tad, it was very collegiate, and we're all on the same page doing the same thing. And I think the issues are very comparable. So letterhead aside, I personally feel that would be a good move.
I think that's great.
Agreed.
Tim, are you staff on this, or is it you and Hillary?
I'm working with Hillary and Ben, but
okay.
I'm lead staff.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to be our conduit. We'll figure out who from the Design Commission is going to participate. Everything will flow to you and through you. And then how about volunteers for the RFI process? One from each commission. And again, Design Commission, we'd like to check in with Commissioner McCarter to see if he has an interest in this before we tell you who it is.
And the time with that would be, you know, we would do a meeting or two to get the thing ready. We could do some email. And then when we get the requests in, it would be to review them. And then, so it wouldn't be sort of every week at all.
Okay.
It would be have a meeting, the thing goes out for a month, have it come back, review some of the proposals, meet, figure out our next step. So
I'd be willing from our side to help with that. So
great.
Talk with you. And since you're so much more, but yeah, for as far as reviewing the RFP, I'd be happy to.
Okay, so Commissioner Foti will take that on for landmarks.
Yeah, I could work with Brian if it comes to that.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Don. Okay.
And if former Commissioner Savinar would like to continue to participate, we welcome his.
Oh, excellent.
Absolutely, since he was part of this from the beginning. So he can absolutely a community member, emeritus member.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll see him tomorrow. I will let him know.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Very good. Okay. That's a great briefing. Thank you very much.
Is that good, Anne? Is that?
No, that's great. I'm sorry it took so long. I know it's a lot of information. And if you want, I'm happy to leave these
if you
tonight
would.
And staff. We can come pick them up tomorrow.
I'll bring them up to my desk at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you can look at them afterwards.
Thank you for that.
No problem.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take just a very brief break. Let's see if we can keep it to 5 minutes and do a technology change.
Thank you.
And then we will come back for our single Type 3 land use review today, One Pacific Square.